Good evening, and welcome back to Goodnight Stories with Nick. Tonight is episode 4, and we're still reading Jim Tice's The Eye of Argon. Tonight we're starting with chapter 7. With wobbling knees and swimming head, the priest that had lapsed into an epileptic seizure rose unsteadily to his feet. While enacting his choking fit in writhing agony, the shaman was overlooked by Grignir. The barbarian had mistaken the seizure for the death throes of the acolyte, allowing the priest to avoid his stinging blade. The sight that met the priest's inflamed eyes nearly served to sprawl him upon the floor once more. The sacrificial sat its grim, blood-spattered silence all around him, broken only by the occasional yelps and howls of his maimed and butchered fellows. Above his head rose the hideous idol, its empty socket holding the shaman's effurbished, infuriated gaze. His eyes turned to a stony glaze with the realization of the pillage and blasphemy. Due to his high susceptibility following the seizure, the priest was transformed into a raving maniac bent solely upon wreaking vengeance. With lips curled and quivering, a crust of foam dripping from them, the acolyte drew a long, wicked-looking, jewel-hilted scimitar from his silver girdle and fled through the aperture into the ceiling, uttering a faintly perceptible ceremonial gibberish. Chapter 7.5. A sweeping scimitar swung towards Grignir's head in a shadow of blur of motion. With axe raised over his head, Grignir prepared to parry the blow, while gaping wide-eyed in open-mouthed perplexity. Suddenly, a sharp snap resounded behind the frothing shaman. The scimitar, halfway through its fatal sweep, dropped from a quivering, nerveless hand, clattering harmlessly to the stone edge. Cutting his screeching short with a bubbling, red-mouthed gurgle, the lacerated acolyte staggered under the pressure of the released springboard. After a moment of hopeless struggling, the shaman buckled, sprawling face down in a widening pool of blued and entrails, his regal purple robe blending enhancingly with the swirling streams of crimson.
"Mrifk! I thought that I had killed the last of those dogs," muttered Grignir in a half-apathetic state.
"Nay, Grignir, you doubtlessly grew careless while giving vent to your lusts. But let us not tarry any longer. Let us not tarry any long, lest we overtax the fates. The paths leading to freedom will soon be barred. The wretch's cries must certainly have attracted unwanted attention," the wench mused.
"By what direction shall we pursue our flight?"
"Up that stair and down the corridor, a short distance, is the concealed entrance to a tunnel seldom used by others than the prince, and known to few. Seldom used by others than the prince, and known to few others, save the palace's royalty. It is used mainly by the prince when he wishes to take leave of the palace in secret. It is not always in the prince's best interests to leave his chateau in public view. Even while under heavy guard, he is often assaulted by hurtling stones and rotting fruits. The commoners have little love for him," lectured the near lady.
"It is amazing that they would ever have left a pig like him become their ruler. I should imagine that his people would rise up and crucify him like the dog he is."
"Alas, Grignir, it is not as simple as all that. His soldiers are well paid by him. So long as he keeps their wages up, they will carry out his damned wishes. The crude implements of the common folk would never stand up under an onslaught of forged blades and protective armor. They would be going to their own slaughter," stated Carthina to a confused but angered Grignir. as they topped the stairway.
Yet how can they bear to live under such oppression? I would sooner die beneath the sword than live under such a dog's command, added Grignir as the pair stalked down the hall in the direction opposite that in which Grignir had come.
But all men are not of the same mold that you were born of. They choose to live as they are so as to save their filthy necks from the chopping block, returned Carthina in a...
All men are not of the same mold that you were born of. They choose to live as they are so as to save their filthy necks from the chopping block, returned Carthina in a disgusted tone as she cast an ape-seed glance toward the stalwart figure at her side whose left arm was wound dexterously around her slim waist, her slowly waning torch casting their images in intermingling wisps as it dangled from his left hand. Presently, Carthina came upon the panel, concealed against... concealed amongst the other granite slabs and discernible only by the burned-out cresset above it. As I pushed the cresset aside, pushed the panel inwards. Carthina motioned to the panel she was referring to and twisted the cresset in a counterclockwise motion. Grignir braced his right shoulder against the walling, concentrating the force of his bulk against it. The slab gradually swung inward with a slight grating sound. Carthina stooped beneath Grignir's corded arms and crawled upon all fours into the passage beyond. Grignir followed after casing the slab back into place. Winding before the pair was a dark, musty tunnel, exhibiting tangled spiderwebs from its ceiling to wall, and an oozing, sickly slime running lazily upon its floor. Hanging from the chipped wall upon Grignir's right side was a half-moldered corpse, its gray, flacking arms held in place by rusted iron manacles. Carthina flinched back into Grignir's arms at sight of the leering set in an ugly, distorted grimace. Staring horribly at her from hollow, gaping sockets. This alcove must have also been used by Agafim as a torture chamber. I wonder how many of his enemies have disappeared into these haunts, never to be heard of again, pondered the hulking brute.
Let us flee before we are also caught within Agafim's ghastly clutches. The exit from this tunnel cannot be very far from here, said Carthina with a slight sob to her voice, as she sagged in Grignir's encompassing embrace.
Aye, it will be best to be finished with this corridor as soon as it is possible, but why do you flinch from the sight of death so? Mrift, you have seen such death this day without exhibiting such emotions, exclaimed Grignir as he led her trembling form along the dingy confines.
The man hanging from the wall was Doyanta. He had committed the folly of showing affections for me in front of Agafim. He never meant any harm by his actions. At this, Carthina broke into a slow, steady whimpering, choking her voice with gasping sobs.
There was never anything between us. Yet, Agafim did this to him, the beast. May the demons of hell's deepest haunts claw away his wretched flesh for this merciless act, she prayed.
I detect that you felt more for this fellow than you wish to let on. But enough of this. We can talk of such matters after we are once more free to do so.
With this, Grignir lifted the grieved female to her feet and strode onward down the corridor, supporting the bulk of her weight with his surging left arm. Presently, a dim light was perceptibly filtering into the tunnel, casting a dim, reddish hue upon the moldy wall of the passage's grim confines. Carthina had ceased her whispering and partially regained her composure. The tunnel's end must be nearing. Rays of sunlight are beginning to seep into... Grignir clamped his right hand over Carthina's mouth and, with a slight struggle, pulled her over to the shadows of the right-hand wall of the path, while at the same time thrusting his torch beneath an overhanging stone to smother its flickering rays.
"Be silent. I can hear footfalls approaching through the tunnel," growled Grignir in a hushed tone.
"All that you hear are the horses corralled at the far end of the tunnel. That is a further sign that we are nearing our goal," she stated.
"All that you hear is less than I hear. I heard footsteps coming towards us. Silence yourself that we may find out whom we are being brought into contact with. I don't doubt that any would have thought as yet of searching this passage for us. The advantage of surprise will be on our side," Grignir warned.
Carthina cast her eyes downward and ceased any further pursuit towards conversation, an irritating habit in which she had gained an amazing proficiency. Two figures came into the pair's view from around a turn in the tunnel. They were clothed in rich, luxuriant silks and rambling on in conversation while ignorant of their crouching foes waiting in an ambush ahead.
"That barbarian dog is cringing beneath the weight of a lash at this very moment, sire. He shall cause no more disturbance."
"Aye, and so it is with any who dare to cross the path of Sargon's chosen one," said the second man.
"But the peasants are showing signs of growing unrest. They complain that they cannot feed their families while burdened with your taxes."
"I shall teach those sluts the meaning of humility. I shall teach those sluts the meaning of humility. Order an immediate increase upon their taxes." "They dare to question my sovereign authority. They shall soon learn what true oppression can be. I will..."
A shadowed bulk leapt from behind a jutting promontory as it brought down a double-edged axe with a striking thought. One of the nobles sagged lifeless to the ground, skull split to the teeth. Grignir gasped as he observed the bisected face set in its leering death agonies. It was Agafind! The dead man's comrade, having recovered from his shock, drew a jewel-encrusted dagger from beneath the folds of his robe and lunged toward the barbarian's back. Grignir spun at the sound from behind and smashed down his crimson axe once more. His antagonist lunged, howling, to a stream of stagnant green water, grasping a spouting stump that had once been a wrist. Grignir raised his axe over his head and prepared to finish the incomplete job, but was deterred halfway through his lunge by a frenzied screech from behind. Carthina leapt to the head of the writhing figure, plunging a smoldering torch into the agonized face. The howls increased in their horrid intensity, stifled by the sizzling of roasting flesh, then died down until the man was reduced to a blubbering mass of squirming, insensate flesh. Grignir advanced to Carthina's side, wincing slightly from the putrid aroma of charred flesh that rose in a puff of thick white smog throughout the chamber. Carthina reeled slightly, staring dazedly downward at her gruesome handiwork.
I had to do it. It was Agafim.
Wait, I thought it was Agafind. It was Agafind, but now it's Agafim.
It was Agafim. I had to, she exclaimed. She exclaimed.
Sargon should be more careful of his right-hand men,
added Grignir, a smug grin upon his lips.
But to hell with Sargon for now. The stench is becoming bothersome to me.
With that, Grignir grasped Garthina around the waist, leading her around the bend in the cave and into the open. A ball of feral red was rising through the mists of the eastern horizon, dissipating the slinking shadows of the night. A corral stood before the pair, enclosing two grazing mares. Grignir reached into a weighted-down leather pouch dangling at his side and drew forth the scintillating red emerald he had obtained from the bloated eyeball. Grignir reached into a weighted-down leather pouch dangling at his side and drew forth the scintillant red emerald he had obtained from the bloated idol. Raising it towards the sun, he said,
"We shall do well with Bauble, eh?"
Garthina gaped at the gem. Oh, my God. Garthina gaped at the gem, gasping in a terrified manner.
"The Eye of Argon! The Eye of Argon! Oh, Kala!"
At this, the gem came off. Garthina gaped at the gem, gasping in a terrified manner.
"The Eye of Argon! Oh, Kala!"
At this, the gem gave off a blinding glow, then dribbled through Grignir's fingers in a slimy red ooze. Grignir stepped back, pushing Garthina behind him. The droplets of slime slowly converged into a pulsating, jelly-like mass. A single opening transfixed the blob, forming into a leech-like maw. Then, the hideous transgressor of nature flowed towards Grignir, a trail of greenish slime lingering behind it. The single gap puckered repeatedly, emitting a ghastly sucking sound. Grignir spread his legs into a battle stance, steeling his quivering thews for a battle royale with a thing he knew not how to fight. Garthina wound her arms about her protector's neck, mumbling, "Kill it, kill," while her entire body trembled. The thing was almost upon Grignir when he buried his axe into the gristly maw. It passed through the blob and clanged upon the ground. Grignir drew his axe back with a film of yellow-green slime clinging to the blade. The thing was seemingly unaffected. Then it started to sluice up his leg. The hairs upon his nape stewed on end from the slimy feel of the thing's bully bulk. The nautis sucking sound became louder, and Grignir felt the blood being drawn from his body. With each hiss of hideous pucker, the thing increased in size. Grignir shook his foot about madly in an attempt to dislodge the blob, but it clung like a leech, still feeding upon his rapidly draining life fluid. He grasped with his hands, trying to rip it off, but only found his hands entangled in a sickly, glue-like substance. The slimy thing continued its puckering, now having grown the size of Grignir's leg from its vampiric feast. Grignir began to reel and stagger under the blob, his chalk-white face and faltering muscles attesting to the gigantic loss of blood. Garthina slipped from Grignir in a death-like faint, a morrow-chilling scream upon her red, rubish lips. In final desperation, Grignir grasped the smoldering torch upon the ground and plunged it into the reeking maw of the travestry. A shudder passed through the thing. Grignir felt the blackness closing upon his eyes, but held on with the last ebb of his rapidly waning vitality. He could feel its grip lessening. His grip lessening as a hideous gurgling sound erupted from the writhing maw. The jelly-like mass began to bubble like a vat of boiling tar as quivers passed up and down its entire form. With a sloshing plop, the thing fell to the ground, evaporating in a thick scarlet cloud until it reattained its original size. It remained thus for a moment as the puckered maw took the shape of a protruding red eyeball, the pupil of which seemed to unravel before it the tale of creation. How a shapeless mass slithered from the quagmires of the stigmatic pool of time, only to degenerate into a leprosy of avaricious lust. In that fleeting moment, the grim mystery of life was revealed before Grignir's ensnared gaze. The eyeball's glare turned to a sudden plea of mercy, a plea for the whole of humanity. Then the blob began to quiver with violent convulsions. The eyeball shattered into a thousand tiny fragments, and evaporated in a curling wisp of scarlet mist. The very ground below the thing began to vibrate and swallow it up with a belch. The thing was gone. The thing was gone forever. All that remained was a dark red blotch upon the face of the earth, blotching things up. Shaking his head, his shaggy mane to clear the jumbled fragments of his mind, Grignir tossed the limp female over his shoulder. Mounting one of the disgruntled mares and leading the other, the weary, scarred barbarian trotted slowly off into the horizon to become a tiny pinpoint in a filtered field of swirling blue mists, leaving the nobles, soldiers, and peasants to replace the missing monarch. Long live the king! By Jim Tice. This was The Eye of Argon. This brings us to the end of our story. Good night. Sleep well. Sweet dreams.